Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the internet. First on the docket, a hearing today on the Chad DeBell matter. It looks like we're going to have one trial. Second, a private dive team is coming to Colorado to search for Suzanne Morphew. Third, a Ponzi scheme you won't believe. Fourth, let's talk IP addresses. And the guy who changed the governor's address for voting. Fifth, peeing on a plane. Yes, that is a crime. Six, more charges for Ron Jeremy. Seventh, DNA solves a 46-year-old homicide case. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. Thanks for watching Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. First, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as always, like this video and leave us a comment below. We do read the comments. First on the docket, we had a hearing this morning in the Chad DeBell matter, and it was a hearing regarding the prosecutor's motion to join the trials of Chad DeBell and his wife, Lori Vallow. Now, this hearing took place before Judge Boyce. We broadcast it live. If you'd like to take a look at it, it's right down below here in the link. So what really happened? Now, we've talked about joinder, and then there's also the difference of severance. Now, a joinder is bringing two cases together for trial. And in this particular case, the prosecutor was basically arguing that, judge, for judicial economy, for ease on the prosecution, as well as taking into account what the victim's family is going to have to go through with multiple trials, it's just not fair. And oh yes, the most important point that the court made in its analysis was all the facts and the evidence that's going to be presented are the same. Even Chad DeBell's attorney, Mark Pryor, conceded that under the rules for joinder, under the Idaho rules of criminal procedure, that the facts are the same. Now, what we didn't get into were issues for severance. Severance is going to be basically down the road. I anticipate Mr. Pryor filing a motion for severance based upon, in his own words, discovery disputes that will hopefully be resolved shortly, where he can file motions regarding the severance motion. Severance is going to be where they point fingers at each other or say there's evidence that's more prejudicial to his client than to the other co-defendant being tried, and therefore the trials should be severed. Now the cases are at least going to be heard in front of one particular judge so that there are not inconsistent legal rulings based upon evidence, which could happen. It does happen where there are multiple co-defendants that sometimes wind up in front of different judges and you get different rulings. They're trying to avoid that. The court said, right now, we're going to join these and we will have one trial, at least as for now. Now, one thing that Mark Pryor, Mr. DeBell's attorney, did very well is even if he knew that this motion was going to be denied, which he did, let's face it, Rule 8A, and even though he filed a motion for supplemental authority last week, which was referred to as the Nava case that was mentioned in the hearing, it was similar as it related to severance, and one of the issues has to be with, and it had to do with issues regarding admissibility of evidence related to one particular defendant and not the other. Mark Pryor filed this objection and held a hearing on the matter. Why is that significant? As a defense attorney, you always have to anticipate and plan for whether you lose. And if you lose, did you preserve those issues on appeal? You may recall Lori Vallow's attorney, Mark Means, said, oh, we don't object. In fact, we want these cases to be joined. We want them to go to trial together. Well, guess what? If his client loses, that's one less appellate issue that they have on appeal. So I know a lot of people have said they don't like Mark Pryor. But I'm telling you, this guy is experienced. He's good. He gets it. I get beat up a little bit when I say this Mark Means guy. Probably not his forte when it comes to criminal defense. I think I will be proven correct. But as I stated, he just waived a potential issue on appeal if he needs to appeal the case after the trial. Obviously, we'll continue to follow this and we'll see if we actually have a trial after the first of the year, given all the COVID issues. Next on the docket, nearly 6 months now have passed since anyone has seen or heard from Suzanne Morphew, the mother of two. Suzanne Morphew, 49, was reported missing on May 10th, on Mother's Day of this year. The process of the investigation in the days and months following Suzanne Morphew's disappearance have been carefully protected by the Chaffee County Sheriff's Office, and they haven't really let a whole lot of people know what's going on. Now, a private dive team will be coming to Colorado to search bodies of water between Salida and Denver. The dive team is called Adventures with Purpose, and they apparently travel across the country diving and recording their videos, and they help police recover cars, guns, boats, and have even located bodies of missing persons in the past. And according to one of the representatives to the dive team, one of the things that they apparently keep coming back to is that Barry Morphew was wet. When he was at the hotel room, he was wet. They're going to search the ponds near the hotel where he was staying. Apparently, there's also mine shafts in the area, as well as hunting grounds, and they're going to be looking through all of those ponds. Now, if anyone's ever flown over the metro area as well as through the mountains, you see lots of little ponds everywhere as you're flying by. These teams, I wish them luck, but I'm not sure exactly how they're going to pick these locations other than the ones nearest to the hotel or near the home of Suzanne Morphew. Next on the docket, a Ponzi scheme you're not going to believe. A man by the name of Garrison Courtney had convinced people he was not just a federal public affairs officer, but he was in fact a covert CIA operative working on a classified task force. Apparently, his fraud was so compelling that even when it began to unravel, the people he duped stonewalled federal investigators, convinced that talking about Courtney would betray his secret program and possibly the United States of America. Well, guess what? Mr. Courtney has now been sentenced and will go to prison for 7 years on his little Ponzi scheme that netted him about $4 million from companies and contractors who thought they were doing their patriotic duty by supporting this guy. Apparently, Mr. Courtney would approach private companies and tell them that he was a covert CIA operative and that they needed him to be added to his payroll to provide off-the-books funding for this classified task force. He promised the companies that they would be reimbursed for their participation in his plan. In all, he raked in $4.4 million, and he kept $1 million and used the other funds to pay companies to keep the scheme going. It's a classic Ponzi scheme. The sentencing argument for Mr. Courtney was rather simple. Hey, I accepted responsibility and I didn't make the government spend all that money to have to go to trial to prove his crimes. Well, obviously acceptance of responsibility is the first step towards rehabilitation, but when they got you dead to right, there's not much you can do. Needless to say, Mr. Courtney has 7 years to think about perhaps perfecting his plan. Now, that is a great segue into why people need to go to crimetalksearch.com. You never know who you are dealing with. There are so many people out there that talk a good game and are complete scammers. Go to crimetalksearch.com where you can anonymously search as many people as you would like, and it's done completely anonymously. You'll be able to search and you'll have a report. And in that report, you'll find out information regarding emails associated with that person, phone numbers and social media associated with that person that you're searching. And then you're going to get criminal history, property records, bankruptcies, civil judgments, and marital records. All the things that you can do to check out those people that, for lack of a better term, sound too good to be true. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, let's talk IP addresses and the guy who was traced to his IP address, who allegedly changed the governor of Florida's mail-in address so he couldn't vote. That's right. While attempting to vote Monday, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was told his address has been changed in the Florida voter database. And when you're the governor, what do? You immediately pick up the phone and contact the police. DeSantis clearly stated that he did not authorize a change in his address and immediately contacted the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate. And investigate they did. And what were they able to do? That's right. They discovered the request was made using a computer with an IP address. And that little IP address was 73.156.214.229. And it was subscribed to Comcast. And then they contacted Comcast, who gave them the information to find out who actually was assigned to that IP address. Needless to say, they obtained a search warrant, went to the home of Anthony Stephen Guevara, who was present when the police arrived, and guess what? He was placed under arrest and remains in custody being held on a $5,000 bond. What have we talked about, ladies and gentlemen? Phones and computers. They are the biggest piece of evidence against anyone. Anytime you do anything on a computer, your IP address is following you around. Yes, there are ways to get around that, but most people don't know that or are too lazy to actually go and take those methods that are available to them. And those methods would ultimately hide or at least try to disguise your IP address, but there's no guarantee for that. And so when you talk about leaving a paper trail or breadcrumbs from you to the crime, do it on the computer. The police will follow those breadcrumbs right back to you. Not that we're encouraging anyone to commit crime. We're certainly not. But I'm telling you, don't do it on the computer. It is traceable to you. Next on the docket, peeing on a plane is a crime. Yes, there are lavatories on an airplane and they have a use for sure. Relieving yourself while you are in your seat is unacceptable. Now, I can tell you, I got to do a case in the great state of South Carolina and got to go to one of the most beautiful courtrooms in Charleston, South Carolina for a case very similar to this. And I'm telling you, it's a felony to disrupt the flight crew, which includes the flight attendants, because you're peeing on a plane. Well, this particular case involves a very well-known pastor who allegedly urinated on a plane. He apparently has since apologized and accepted full responsibility, but his name is Daniel Chalmers, and he is with the Love Wins Ministries. Well, apparently he was on the flight, and the woman next to him was fast asleep. When she woke up, she thought that she felt something wet and warm, and when she woke up, she saw the man, who she identified as Chalmers, with his private area out, and he was in fact peeing on her. She obviously immediately got back up, notified the flight attendants, and when the flight landed, the police spoke with Mr. Chalmers. He, of course, denied any wrongdoing and in fact threatened to sue Delta Airlines for defaming him. Now, what have we always said? The first story usually isn't the truth. Well, it turns out that after consulting with the police a little while longer, and he originally denied drinking, apparently he did have a couple of drinks and probably a little bit of Ambien, and the Ambien and alcohol combination is what caused Mr. Chalmers to relieve himself on the plane, not in the lavatory. It was also determined that Mr. Chalmers submitted to a preliminary breath test that registered at a 0.175. Apparently, when you're just a wee bit over 2 times the legal limit and you take an Ambien, you have no idea what the hell is going on. Won't be a good defense. Hopefully, for Mr. Chalmers' sake, he will not be charged with a felony in the United States District Court. But Mr. Chalmers, if you do, call me. Got a great result. I'm telling you, it was a sweetheart deal because most people get felonies and prison. My client didn't. Got a misdemeanor. Paid a fine. Call me. Next, let's talk about Ron Jeremy, the now in jail former porn star, and will probably be spending the rest of his life in prison. It only keeps getting worse for Ron Jeremy. The now 67-year-old ex-old porn star has had additional charges filed against him. In fact, 7 more sex crimes charged. He now faces 330 years to life in prison if he's ultimately convicted. The new charges accused Mr. Jeremy of sexually assaulting a 19-year-old back in 1996 at a photo shoot, a 17-year-old in 2007, and another woman going back to 2002 or 2003, and finally another woman in 2010 who was 38 years old at the time, where she says she was sexually assaulted by Jeremy at a bar. Now, Mr. Jeremy is in a world of big time trouble. With all of these cases, it is not looking good, but he needs to start realizing that at his ripe age of 67, that whatever he gets, it is going to be a life sentence, and he may want to start thinking of plea deals. That's right, plea deal. When you have that many charges, yes, you can go to trial, but something is going to stick and you're going to go to prison. Start thinking plea deal there, Mr. Jeremy. Next on the docket, DNA solves a 46-year-old murder of a young Montana girl. Genealogical DNA helped solve the 46-year-old murder of a young 5-year-old at the time known as Siobhan McGinnis. She was a 5-year-old who lived in Montana who vanished while walking home from her neighbors at a dinner time. She vanished while walking home from a neighbor's house near dinner time on a cold afternoon in February. Fortunately, the young girl's body was found 2 days later in a culvert off of Interstate 91, which was about 10 miles from her home. She had sustained trauma to the head, and there was evidence that she had been assaulted sexually. Both state and local authorities identified the man by the name of Richard Williams Davis, who actually died in Arkansas in 2012. He would have been 32 at the time of this murder. Now, the FBI said that this Davis character lived in several locations and traveled across the country, sometimes as a truck driver in 1974, right about the time the 5-year-old was abducted. Now, during the time of abduction, there were statements in this case that people had seen a Cadillac with New York plates on it. That kind of stood out in Montana, apparently, in 1974. No one could figure that out, but it's looking like, since that's where Mr. Davis was from, it's more likely that that was, in fact, the car that people had seen. The suspect at the time left behind DNA, but it matched nothing in the crime database. Finally, the detectives compared it to DNA on a genealogical site and found a familial match. The match ultimately led to Mr. Davis. Now, while Davis had never been convicted or suspected of any similar type of crimes, the FBI and other law enforcement agencies are checking to see where he had traveled to see if anything else would possibly come up. The FBI said he has been linked to an attempted abduction of an 8-year-old in 1973, but they were not able to provide any further information on this. Now, this just shows you that people can live a double life and do terrible things. According to the police, Davis was born in Pennsylvania and lived there until the early 1960s. Then he lived in South Dakotas in the late 1960s, where he worked as a missionary on the Sioux Reservation, as well as a miner. He was a security guard in New York and spent a season driving a school bus in Alaska before ultimately settling down in Arkansas, where he worked once again as a security guard for the Arkansas School for the Deaf and Blind. And he also was a truck driver there as well. And he volunteered with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Have we talked about that? You can't necessarily prove it. Wanted to be near the children. Just saying, ladies and gentlemen, start seeing those patterns, don't you now? Apparently, Mr. Davis's family has been very cooperative in the investigation, and they too would like to know if any other crimes were committed so that finally justice can be brought to these people and closure as well. And finally today, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Yep, that's right. You think we'd had enough with masked dumb criminals? Nope, they keep a coming. Please meet Mr. Christopher Vacha, 30 years old. And apparently the other day, he called for an Uber to arrive. Well, the Uber, in fact, did arrive because that app is so darn convenient. And it was around 4:30 a.m. and it was near a waterfront apartment complex in Treasure Island. This is down in Florida. When the car arrived, the driver, a gentleman by the name of Raymond Jackson, who is 68 years old, probably trying to make a few extra bucks, told Mr. Vacha, "Hey, you have to wear a mask or you could not ride." Investigators allege that Mr. Vacha then blew into the driver's face through the driver's window. When Jackson exited the car, Vacha punched him in the face, according to the affidavit. Mr. Vacha was arrested for aggravated battery on a person age 65 or older, which is a felony. He was also charged with resisting for allegedly ignoring police officers to place his hands behind his back. He's currently in jail on a $50,000 bond. Now, not exactly sure if Mr. Vacha was leaving for work, heading home from the party that was just getting over. But Mr. Vacha, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. And as always, our dumb criminal contestants provide that teachable moment. Whether you want to wear a mask or you don't, I think most people would like to not wear a mask, but you do it so that you don't wind up getting in situations like this, where you're now facing a felony conviction, you're in custody, and facing posting a $50,000 bond. I bet if we were to look back with Mr. Vacha in hindsight, he'd probably say, "I guess I should have wore the damn mask." Well, Mr. Vacha, if you are selected as our dumb criminal contestant of the week, and you've got some strong competition, as always, guess what? We will send you a mug. That's right. And in that mug, you can breathe on it, blow on it all you want, and it's not going to get you charged with felonies. So, Mr. Vacha, good luck. For those of you who would like Crime Talk mugs or merchandise, hit the link below. That way, you don't have to become a dumb criminal contestant winner to do so. Thanks for watching. Have a great day. Let me know what you think about the ruling in the Chad DeBell matter. One trial, or you think we're still going to get two? I somehow think Mr. Pryor's going to make a record so that if he loses, he's got some good appellate issues. Let me know what you think below. Have a great day. Thanks for watching.